Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. It's another podcast from those very strange people at Enterprise Agility.
Hi, and welcome to another podcast on Enterprise Agility brought to you by the Agility Crew. Our crew consists of leading experts in the industry who give their knowledge freely to invest in the skills we all need. Now let's join our crew for this week's episode.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Mann. And our crew is injured. Both of us, actually, seem to be... Ricardo's done his upper shoulder and I've done my lower back. So we're both in grumpy pain mode at the moment, probably annoying our wives no end.
Is that grumpy from grumpy old men, right?
It probably is, isn't it? Anyway, welcome everyone. Welcome, Ricardo. Great to be together again. Today I want to talk about something that has been on my mind for a week. And I think actually from the chats we were having in prep for this, it's been on your mind as well.
Yeah.
Which is essentially the subject. The golden question is, how do you make a transformation stickable so it's there after you've left? But also, you know, is there a way of avoiding a transformation that requires you to bring in 100 coaches to do the work of the transformation? That's what we're going to talk about today for leaders. And it's part of a series. We did another one a couple of weeks ago, which you will find on our feed, which was, okay, so you've signed off 6 million for coaches and to do a big transformation. That's a lot of money. Maybe 6 million is too much money. Maybe it's 1 million you signed off to do it. How do you know you're getting value? How do you know you're getting something for that money other than, you know, just the purchase order? And it's a little different from different worlds, because Ricardo and I come from different kinds of worlds. Ricardo's more DevOps than I am. I'm more business coach organized. And, you know, Ricardo has the advantage of, here is the physical stuff you get from me. Here are the reports. Here is the website. Here is all this, you know, less so for me. So that's the debate we're in. So part of that debate is, you know, the use of what, let's call it agile champions. And for the purpose of what we're talking about, that's people in the company that can become champions for the change, whatever the change is. Agile, as we've always said, agile is just a subtext for transformation success, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's the area. And I know you're debating this at the moment as well, Ricardo, aren't you, with some of the work you're doing about how to do it?
Yeah. And it was actually with one of my DevOps clients. We're talking a bit about how do you get some effective change done. And in the past, maybe 5 years ago, they've said, yeah, it's a 400-person organization you want to change. Let's bring you 12 coaches in and let's divide it up. And then the next step naturally would be, let's do a stakeholder mapping and the organization mapping and find out where to plant some seeds to get some champions. And what they said is, there is no way we can get budget for 12 coaches. And what we realized, and I've done a couple of transformations like that, I'm involved in one where I have one coach and 300 people, for example. And there, if I remember when those transformations were starting, I would spend all my effort in getting that team of coaches who were all people like me, that is really stubborn people. I was probably the most stubborn because I was their leader, but someone seriously compete with my level of stubbornness aligned. And now what I've done is go directly to find those champions and aligning them. And I think it's really good because it avoids all the wasted effort in aligning people who are going to leave anyway and gets me to already align a part of the organization. And those are people in context. Those are people that are respected. So, yeah, I'm all in on doing transformations with agile champions. And I'm lucky that I don't work at McKinsey, so I'm not measured by numbers of hours sold.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I could tell so many stories on this. A company I worked for previously, we had 80 coaches. Let me rewind. There's a saying I have, which is one of the worst jobs an enterprise coach can have is team leader of coaches. Because, you know, I wish it just was herding cats. That would be the easy, if it was just that. It's herding scorpions who have very sharp teeth and poison tails who want to poison you and poison each other. That's, you know, it's because somehow the market attracts people who think that their opinion matters more than their ability to deliver by a mile. And therefore, you know, they think every meeting they go into, their value is if they give their opinions. And, you know, as I say, a team of 20 coaches have 50 opinions argued vociferously within them. So, you know, they're just, my collective now for a bunch of agile coaches is an argument of coaches, because that's what they like to work together. So I used to think the skill was making sure you got the coaches who were less stubborn, as you've said, more humble, able to work as part of a team. You know, you don't want a football team full of Ronaldos. You want maybe one Ronaldo. Okay, yes, when he was at his best, he was, you know, he was changing the world. But you don't want 11 of them on the pitch and five of them on the bench that, you know, are complaining that they're not on the pitch, you know. So there's that to take care of. And so I used to think the way forward was to make sure you got the right people. But I'm more interested now in getting people in the company who are there long term, who are already invested in the company and not invested in their own opinion, to do the work. And that's what we'll call the Agile Champions. In fact, again, at another company we worked at, I was hosting a meeting of a bunch of coaches, and one of them says to me, there's about 50 people on this call, by the way. One of them says to me, you know, why on earth have you advocated this idea of Agile Champions? I've got an Agile Champion allocated to my team who knows nothing about Agile. What on earth is going on? And I sort of explained the idea that when we leave, we leave behind an organization that can do without us. And, you know, that's why they're allocating Agile Champions. They're allocating Agile Champions to all the teams so that there's someone left behind afterwards. And it was definitely a turkeys voting for Christmas moment, because lots of the coaches were going, why would we ever give our skills to permanent people? And I went, well, that's your job here. Your job is to pass that on to, you know, and they just didn't get it. But within that, your point earlier, you know, they're already aligned. They already believe in the company. They already, you know, all we're giving them is skills, these champions. And I think it was George H. Bush who put it like this, one of the American presidents. He said, I can always train my loyalists to do a job. I can't bring in specialists and make them loyalists. You know, it's that way around, isn't it?
Yeah, I usually say it in a simpler way than he did, because I'm a bit more humble than George. But I say it's very hard to put care in people. I want people who care. You cannot make people care. You can teach stuff to people, but you cannot make them care. And if I find someone who cares, I don't care how much he knows. He cares, and he'll learn. He will do. He will drag people behind. People are dragged naturally by people who care, who want that. It is cool. And I agree. I viscerally disagree with that coach, which is that it's bad to have someone who knows nothing about Agile. That's not the criteria for choosing organizational champions. You want people that will maximize the adoption of Agile in your organization. You're looking for skeptics. If you turn a skeptic into a champion, that's going to drag 100% behind. If you turn someone that was already blabbing about Agile to the rest of the organization, they're going to say, yeah. You already heard that. So it's the skeptics, the people who are deeply against it, that if you turn, it's the people who don't know and suddenly start to know, and other people who go, whoa, John learned about this stuff. I can learn too, because I know John knew nothing about this. So I viscerally disagree with your fellow coach in the call.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember another story before we get into some more quick tips. How are we doing for time? 9 minutes in, that's okay. I remember one where I was doing a bunch of people. There were about 15 people on a day with me, and they were all from finance, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and finance is where power is kept in most companies, the finance department. So I was doing a day with them, and at the end of the first session, there were about 15 of them, and there were three of them that were starting to get it. And we took a coffee break. And I asked the three of them to come and sit with me for a bit. And I went, the honest truth, guys, is your colleagues don't listen to me, because I'm a coach. I'm going to be here for a while. I'm going to leave. They all don't think I've got the experience to work in finance, but they will listen to you. They won't listen to me. So I just want to encourage you, I said.
So true.
You've got some insight here. This brings out another thing that I sort of don't like about coaches is they still believe that they are sort of Moses from on high coming down with 10 commandments and the great people will love them for just being able to say, I have the commandments. As though there's almost an arrogance, I think, in a lot of coaches that, you know. Now, yes, it's true. I as a coach, you as a coach, we're confident about what we know can make a difference. We wouldn't be doing it otherwise. We care. But there's a bunch of that can go too far into the category of, like, let me just explain the Agile Manifesto to you. There you go. Jobs are good and please pay my invoice. As though that's sort of creating a value. It's always puzzled me, really.
Yeah, and I think you and I are a bit lucky. I'm going to go a bit on a side note on these coaches at organizations, because at least you and me, we can answer what have you delivered somewhere else question.
Yes.
But that question is still not the one that organizations want. What organizations want is what have you delivered here, just because it worked. So at least we pass one hurdle. We've proven you've led all that work at Telefonica and so many other places. I've done all the stuff I've done over the years. People can see my software running and can see. So at least we pass one hurdle. But many of the coaches, I think the reason why they go like they are doing the Ten Commandments is actually some imposter syndrome buried deep there, because the only thing they have to show is their scrum, their 50 letters. I always look at those 50 letters after the name. I have three of them. I don't use them, the CAT taught by you.
Thank you.
But thank you
for the work.
There's a lot of that.
I agree with you, by the way. There are, you know, there's people who have their name followed by, you know, and their name is about 3% of the title. The rest of it is all the qualification. In fact, a friend of mine refuses, you know, there is a trend. And because I work as a trainer, I'm part of the game in that sense. When people put their certifications up and I've trained them, I congratulate them. I point out their hard work. I suggest, you know, why they could be good at the role. But, you know, one of my friends just goes, just never going to reply to a certification message. Never, never, ever, ever as a policy. So, I'm not a fan of those people that go, because I have all these letters, I must, therefore,
you must
be Moses.
Listen to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bit of a digression, but I think it's highly connected.
Well, if you think of our audience,
the value that those people bring, those people have delivered stuff in that organization, in that context. And the only thing they're going to do is deliver it differently. But if they are changing, they're saying, I used to deliver this way, and now I found a better way to deliver. Which is very different than follow these 10 rules because they are written on the Scrum book.
Yes. I just want to emphasize what you've said, because I think I might have talked over the start of it. The thing about finding the right agile champions in an organization is they already have a delivery track record.
Correct.
That's the big point. What you're doing is giving them a different way to deliver within the delivery track record they've already got.
They're the guy who was really proficient at using a screwdriver, and now you teach them how to use an electric screwdriver, and now they can screw three times faster.
Yeah, yeah. As opposed to, why don't I bring in 19 people who keep pointing out there's such a thing as an electric screwdriver?
Yeah.
But have never actually used it.
The other guys say, you found a better way of doing what you're already good at.
Brilliant stuff. So that's why Agile Champions as a way forward is the way. There could be other names you use for it. We're going to use the words Agile Champion. But
yeah, I've seen ambassadors also being used.
That's also, I think, this point about delivery, you know, that's also why if I look at the job market now, there's a lot of people not asking for agile coaches, but asking for agile delivery managers who can coach.
Yeah.
I think that's bringing out the same point you're making, Ricardo, which is, you know, if it wasn't obvious to the whole of the industry, the ability to deliver, it, not the ability to pontificate, is the key attribute that gets success.
Yeah, think of the first interview question for a coach is, where have you coached before? First interview question for an agile delivery manager is, what have you delivered before?
Yeah. It just shows it up really clearly, doesn't it? So this idea of how do you embed change if you're a coach, what you do is go and find these agile champions in the company. And if you think about it, what you're doing is, if you think of the phases of a transformation, you're in the transient move to a new organizational structure and new ways of working. The leaders you use during the transient bit, the more of them that are there at the end,
the more likely it is to stick.
Exactly. Exactly. So why bring in 80 coaches to do a transformation job when in fact maybe you bring in 5 and those 5 go and find 75 champions?
Yeah. It's a multiplier effect. It's more cost efficient to the client and it is a lot stickier. Except if your organization has a retention rate of 20%, as I've seen a few. An argument I saw in an organization here in Latvia at the moment where the job market was really hot is that they didn't want us to train champions, because what had happened is that every guy that became a trained champion went and got a job, a better paid job at Tieto or Accenture or something else. That was the, sorry for interrupting you, but I just remember that story. No, you cannot make that guy a champion. You need to use your coaches, because if you train our guys, they'll just leave.
That is an issue. That is an issue. I agree with you. It's an issue because the last place I worked, I said, let's make a agile coach factory that generates and creates from within the pool of this company 10 coaches a year that can coach. They won't be, you know, brilliant coaches, but they'll be coaches. They'll be good. They'll know to do delivery. You know, they're learning the trade. No coach is brilliant at 2 years experience. They're just not. Let's just admit it, you know. So, and they said, why a factory? And I went, because pretty much as soon as you're producing them, you're going to be losing them somewhere after a year.
Yeah, that's the 20% retention rate of coaches. Exactly. Although nowadays they would stay, because the market is a lot less hot for coaches. But they might. So now you need to create a factory of agile delivery managers.
Yes. Okay, so the tip we want to bring out in this one, the sort of quick tip for all leaders, is if you get some transformation coaches who've got this change manager background in them, which is where I've come through. I came through as a transformation change manager before I learned Agile. A change manager already knows. I remember when I first did this at Telefonica, our entire change department consisted of 3 of us.
Yeah.
And the rule was, I remember the guy who brought this in, he was the guy who ran the team. I was the junior member of 3 at the time. And he went, we're not going to put more people into this because this is a temporary role. What we want to do is get the other people to do the change. We guide them, we encourage them, we change them, we get their attitude right, but actually they do the work and then we move on to the next thing to do.
They do the work and it becomes their change.
Yeah.
You do the work for them, it's not their change.
Which again goes back to the point that a lot of agile coaches think they're the hero of the story. No. They think, you know, as you know, because I did your CAT certification and others, you know, we're not the heroes. The final slide that I always put up is a picture of Luke and Yoda, with Yoda on Luke's back out of the Star Wars, with the sign, you are not the hero. You know, our job is Yoda, not Luke. Mm-hmm. And again, that comes out. Okay, so we're saying go and find, fairly early on in the transformation, go and find what we'll call, for the purpose of what we're talking about, agile champions. Where do you find them, Ricardo? What's your own view on how we do that?
You have to look at the network of people, find railroad junctions, people that are very well connected in the organization are one. People, they are not necessarily leaders, so the best agile champions are not managers. They are people that are respected for their achievement.
Okay, I'm writing these down because they're super. First of all, look for people who are well connected.
Yeah.
That means
they influence multiple parts of the organization, or they work with other teams. That helps with the spread.
Yes, so someone who's well-connected cross-team as well helps, because they've already built, they already know that they need to be a network builder. They already know they need to be a bridge builder. They're sort of already in them. They've already got that skill, and they've got evidence of that. That's a great one. Well-connected cross-team people. Not necessarily profilic, prolific or high-profile leaders yet.
No. Those guys are way too busy to help you.
Ah, no, that's a good point.
You need their help as sponsors.
So the real
Don't
leaders need to sponsor.
Your ambassadors with your sponsors.
Brilliantly put, mate. Brilliantly put.
Someone needs to sign the check. Someone needs to write a proposal that will generate a check to get signed.
So that's why it's we don't go for that. Although you do want, in a transformation, you do want some leader sponsorship or all that. We're not trying to say no to that. What we're doing is looking for champions. The best thing to do is, first of all, look for well-connected people who can work cross-team, who know a lot of people. And they've done that because that's how they get stuff done anyway. It's not like it's sort of, yeah. Then the second one you said was respected for what they've done.
Yeah. And the third one, but this is a very personal thing. I don't know if other people do it. So don't necessarily try this at home, but I always try to find who are the three or four most skeptical people about the transformation. Because if I can convert two or three of those, those are going to have, it's not because of their network, it's because everyone knows that they were against it and they turned for. And no, bribing them doesn't work. You have to actually convince them.
I had one of those in my first big one. It was a guy who, whenever we did any all-hands calls, was always very critical of what was going on. And I remember I went to the COO after one of these incidents and went, he's got to go. I can't, you know, he's really holding things back, this guy. He's, you know, he's grumpy, he's difficult on the all-hands calls. He's got to go. And the COO said to me, okay, I agree that we will give him a good redundancy package, provided you spend the next 3 months trying to win him over first. And if at the end of 3 months you haven't won him over, then
I'll make one of the two of you redundant.
Yes. Didn't quite put it like that, but yeah. And so, you know, it's always what's in it for me. That's always what's going on. So for this guy, his name was Glenn, I actually approached him and said, look, you know, you've got some good insight here. You might be right about some of these things. Why don't you join our main key transformation sort of governing body, what I now would call the Guiding Coalition or the LACE, but in those days, governing body was the phrase I used. Why don't you come and join us? You know, please don't take the role of chief skeptic, but come and join us and, you know, try and help out and see what you can see. Because I think you can add something to what we're doing. And, you know, you've got a lot of experience in this company. And he came on board. And by the sort of 3 months afterwards, all hands call, he was deeply passionate about what we were doing and how to do it and what he'd seen. And I remember on the call, we were in a room and the COO and me and a few others were sort of doing an all hands from the room and everyone was listening to it. And I remember him saying something on the call and me sort of eyeing the COO and going, yep, you were right. I just hadn't put the effort in.
Yeah. No, I remember also two. There was one in my first transformation at the client. So it was a small scope, like 120 people across teams. And then the people on the business, there was one of them who wouldn't even take my calls. And put a lot of effort. Nowadays, he is the chief product owner of the whole organization and the biggest driver of agility in that organization.
Okay.
So he didn't see the value, because what was happening there, we were calling a group of very professional and with a lot of achievements, product managers. We wanted to call them product owners, and we wanted to teach them how to manage a product. That was not the way. The way I found was, tell me something that is not working for you. I finally managed to get him in the corridor. He told me, I helped him fix it, and he said, oh, this stuff could work. Let's give it a try. That's how I won him over. Another one that was also not taking the calls, that was much lower in the organization, was the responsible for the Siebel teams. once I dove into it, I found out she was doing daily workshops with the teams where they're collaborating and clarifying exactly what they wanted to build. They were doing one-day iterations on the work. Her case was different. She was so agile that implementing that change would have slowed her down. She was not using the agility words, but if you're running one-day sprints and you're producing results, I don't care what you call it. This is agile.
That's quite right. Quite right. That brings out, by the way, an advice point you gave me a couple of months ago, which is really good, which is, you know, I was starting to work at a company and they were saying, the chief exec said to me, don't sort of use the words transformation, don't use the words agile, it won't really help. And I remember mentioning this to you in a call, not a podcast, we were just chatting, and you said, well, don't concentrate on the buzzwords, concentrate on the problems that need solving. And that, by the way, was really key for me sort of doing that, which is we went into some workshops. I said, what are the problems? They went this. They're all signed up now for what is a transformation path that is because they know that they're solving the problems that matter to them. Not they've not got some deep theory coming at them from left wing, from Moses on high, as it were.
Yeah. And talking about theory, theoretically, we wanted to record a shorter episode.
We did, didn't we?
We were at 25 minutes, 52 seconds.
Let's recap for the purpose of our lovely audience quickly what we've done. Some real insight from you. Use Agile Champions to help stickiness. What do you look for in people that become Agile Champions? Your point, Ricardo, well-connected, cross-platform people who are respected for what they've already delivered. And skeptics. That's what you said. Yes. And I couldn't endorse it more if I tried. That's fantastic. Yeah. All right. Yeah. We'll leave it there. So you're going to hear where we can get hold of either of us. By all means, reach out. We're both jobbing people. We're not theorists. We literally do these things for a living. If you want to employ either of us, we're always interested. We've always got sort of the hope of more work somewhere. We can fit more work in if we tried, I think. So
I will not let my wife listen to this part of the podcast. She already calls me a workaholic.
Yeah. Same here, mate. My wife calls me a workaholic all the time. She's going, what are you doing this for this time of day? Anyway, that's it for today. I really hope you enjoyed it. I loved talking this through with you, Ricardo. Really loved talking through with you. Here come all the sound IDs.
That's it for this episode. Why not check out our back catalog of previous episodes and show notes? Go to enterpriseagility.info to connect and sign up. Our crew consists of leading experts in the industry who give their knowledge freely to invest in the skills we all need. Each week, we'll be discussing the hot topics around enterprise agility. Sometimes it'll be our main crew discussing a topic. Sometimes it'll be an interview with an industry expert. Sometimes straight from the trenches with a practitioner like yourself. And sometimes it'll be a Q&A session based on your question on our social channels. You can reach out to Ricardo and Ian on Twitter. Ian is Ian at Big Agility, and Ricardo is Rick Lib, R-I-C-L-I-B. You can also send us a voice question on Twitter. See you next time on the Enterprise Agility Mastery Podcast.